Day 458, Tuesday, July 2nd, Isaiah 28, Isaiah 28, 129 NKJV. Woe to the crown of pride, to the drunkards of Ephraim, whose glorious beauty is a fading flower which is at the head of the verdant valleys, to those who are overcome with wine. Behold, the Lord has a mighty and strong one, like a tempest of hail and a destroying storm, like a flood of mighty waters overflowing, who will bring them down to the earth with his hand. The crown of pride, the drunkards of Ephraim, will be trampled underfoot, and the glorious beauty is a fading flower which is at the head of the verdant valley, like the first fruit before the summer, which an observer sees. He eats it up while it is still in his hand. In that day the Lord of hosts will be for a crown of glory and a diadem of beauty to the remnant of his people, for a spirit of justice to him who sits in judgment, and for strength to those who turn back the battle at the gate. But they also have erred through wine, and through intoxicating drink are out of the way. The priest and the prophet have erred through intoxicating drink. They are swallowed up by wine. They are out of the way through intoxicating drink. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. For all tables are full of vomit and filth. No place is clean. Whom will he teach knowledge? And whom will he make to understand the message? Those just weaned from milk? Those just drawn from the breasts? For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little, dot. For with stammering lips and another tongue he will speak to this people, to whom he said, "This is the rest with which you may cause the weary to rest, and this is the refreshing." Yet they would not hear, but the word of the Lord was to them, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little, that they might go and fall backward, and be broken and snared and caught. Therefore hear the word of the Lord, you scornful men, who rule this people who are in Jerusalem, because you have said, "We have made a covenant with death, and with Sheol we are in agreement." When the overflowing scourge passes through, it will not come to us, for we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood we have hidden ourselves. Therefore thus says the Lord God, behold, I lay in Zion a stone for a foundation, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation. Whoever believes will not act hastily. Also I will make justice the measuring line, and righteousness the plummet. The hail will sweep away the refuge of lies, and the waters will overflow the hiding place. Your covenant with death will be annulled, and your agreement with Sheol will not stand. When the overflowing scourge passes through, then you will be trampled down by it. As often as it goes out it will take you, for morning by morning it will pass over, and by day and by night, it will be a terror just to understand the report. Dot. For the bed is too short to stretch out on, and the covering so narrow that one cannot wrap himself in it. For the Lord will rise up as at Mount Perazim, he will be angry as in the valley of Gibeon, that he may do his work, his awesome work, and bring to pass his act, his unusual act. Now therefore, do not be mockers, lest your bonds be made strong, for I have heard from the Lord God of hosts, a destruction determined even upon the whole earth. Give ear and hear my voice, listen and hear my speech. Does the plowman keep plowing all day to sow? Does he keep turning his soil and breaking the clods? When he has leveled its surface, does he not sow the black cumin and scatter the cumin, plant the wheat in rows, the barley in the appointed place, and the spelt in its place? For he instructs him in right judgment, his God teaches him. For the black cumin is not threshed with a threshing sledge, nor is a cartwheel rolled over the cumin, but the black cumin is beaten out with a stick, and the cumin with a rod. Bread flour must be ground, therefore he does not thresh it forever, break it with his cartwheel, or crush it with his horsemen. This also comes from the Lord of hosts, who is wonderful in counsel and excellent in guidance. Daily Deep Dive. The UCG reading plan states, in the previous two chapters of Isaiah, he had focused on the wonderful future that awaits Israel and Judah, but now he returns to his dire theme of warning. In this chapter we have first a condemnation of Ephraim followed by one addressed to the scornful men in Jerusalem. Verse 14. While this prophecy could have been given earlier, its position in the text would seem to date it to shortly before Sennacherib's invasion of 701 BC, 2 decades after the deportation of Ephraim. So the warning to Ephraim, the chief of the northern 10 tribes, was very likely a message intended for Israel of the last days. Indeed, the wording of verses 5-6 and particularly verse 22, destruction determined even upon the whole earth, makes that rather clear. Verses 1-8 show that the people of Israel have become drunk. While this could denote a problem with actual alcoholic drunkenness, it is more likely meant to signify spiritual drunkenness, As in other scriptural passages, the people become practically intoxicated through false ideologies and their own stubbornness. In this state, they are incapable of understanding what God has to say to them, and thus are blind to His truth. Verses 9-10 explain the way God reveals knowledge, and it is a major key to understanding the Bible. It is not merely as a babe drinking milk, compare Hebrews 5:13. Rather, we must work at studying the Bible. It is somewhat like assembling a jigsaw puzzle, with the message of truth scattered throughout its pages. We must search out all that the Bible has to say about a particular subject, bringing scattered information together, to understand God's truth about that matter. For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little, Isaiah 28 hours, and 10 minutes. Some reject this concept by pointing to the context of the people's blindness and drunkenness and the repetition of the above phrase in verse 13, where it is added, that they might go and fall backward, and be broken and snared and caught. But that is actually consistent with interpreting verses 9-10 as relating the proper way to understand. In fact, it should help us to better grasp the point God is making. God has revealed His truth here a little and there a little for this very purpose, so that when those in the world, whose minds are willingly closed to His truth, attempt to comprehend it, they are unable. To them it seems one great mass of confusion. Indeed it seems drunkenness when they themselves are the ones who are spiritually drunk, and they fall backwards over it, tripping and stumbling. But to those God has called to understand His purpose, it all comes together, and it all makes sense. For the same reason Jesus spoke in parables, so the multitudes would not understand but His true followers would. Luke 8:10. The context, then, is this. God has arranged His word so that spiritually drunk people are unable to comprehend it. They trip and stumble over it as drunkards trip and stumble in general. They refuse to hear. Isaiah 28 hours and 12 minutes. Indeed, they refuse to hear and heed the way to understand given in verses 9-10. So they remain drunk. That was true in Isaiah's time. And, sadly, it remains true today. The mention of the foundation and cornerstone, verse 16, quoted by the apostles Peter and Paul as referring to Jesus Christ. Romans 9:33, Ephesians 2:20, 1 Peter 2:6, also reveals this prophecy to have a later application. Paul emphasized that whoever believes Isaiah 28 hours and 16 minutes, Romans 10:11, was not restricted to the Jews, and explained this as opening the way for the Gentiles to come to God. Moreover, Isaiah 28 hours and 11 minutes 12 is quoted by Paul in discussing the subject of speaking in tongues. 1 Corinthians 14:21, covenant with death. Isaiah mentions Jerusalem's leaders making a covenant with death or agreement with Sheol, the grave. Isaiah 28 hours and 14 minutes 15:18. The phrase simply means that the people of Israel, or Judah, thought they had an agreement worked out by which they could avoid death. But God will soon annul that and strike His people with judgment. Isaiah 28 hours and 28 minutes. Bible readers, companion, note on verse 15. In Isaiah's day, perhaps this applied to the nation's agreement with Egypt or Babylon to defend against Assyria. Yet, because some of this passage apparently refers to the end time as we've seen, the covenant with death may as well. In that context, it could refer to an Israeli pact or treaty with Europe that may initially preserve the Jewish state, an agreement such as that made with Antiochus Epiphanes in the 2nd century BC, see Daniel 11:23, and later with the Romans. None of these agreements has preserved the people of the Holy Land, and neither would any made in the end time. Isaiah 28 contains some powerful imagery from Israel's history in verse 21. The mention of God rising up as at Mount Perazim refers back to a battle David fought with the Philistines when they sought to get rid of him soon after he became king of the combined northern and southern tribes. Compare 2 Samuel 5, 1720, 1 Chronicles 14, 8-11. The Valley of Gibeon refers to the famous Joshua's long day battle against the Amorites in defense of Gibeon, when God not only prevented the sun from setting, but also used hailstones to kill even more Amorites than the Israelites killed with the sword. Compare Joshua 10, 6-14. What should be disconcerting to the Israelites is that in this prophecy God's wrath is directed against them rather than against their enemies. Finally, in the last few verses of Isaiah 28, God uses some harvesting analogies that contain both a warning and some encouragement. The farmer uses his judgment on how much the grain needs to be ground. God, the farmer, will continue to grind Israel through trials as long as he determines it is necessary. It's not up to Israel, the grain in the analogies, to say when God should bring their trials to an end, but God adds two encouraging thoughts. He reminds Israel that he is aware of the fact that some types of grain need delicate threshing methods, lest the grain be ruined. To be sure, some of the trials he allows his people to endure are truly gentle by comparison to what they could be without his oversight. The other point is that, regardless of how much threshing needs to be done, it's only part of the process. That is, Israel can count on the fact that at some point, the grinding, that is, the trials, will cease, and God will move on to the next part of his plan. As David wrote in Psalm 103, "For he knows our frame, he remembers that we are dust and the mercy of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting." Verses 14, 17, and verse 5. Regarding the diadem of beauty, the Albert Barnes commentary states, "A beautiful garland." The phrase stands opposed to the wreath of flowers or the diadem which was represented Isaiah 28, 1, Isaiah 28, 3 as adorning the kingdom and capital of Israel. Yahweh and his government would be to them their chief glory and ornament.